Hey, what's up, you guys? I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And you're listening to Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Hello, friends, and happy Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah, this will go up on Thursday. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Happy Thursday, everyone.
So, Haley's got some news for you guys.
Yeah.
So, take it away.
Yeah. I have some news about the Madeline McCann case. So, we covered her case back in, I want to say November, December of 2021. So, if you haven't listened to that, go listen to that because you won't know what we're talking about. I covered it in two parts. It was like super in-depth. I did a ton of research for it. So go listen to that if you haven't already. But there is some news in the case. So a man, a German man named Christian Bruckner, he was in the summer of 2020 announced as the primary suspect in Madeline's murder, which to this day, like a body has never been found. It's never been confirmed that she's been murdered. But the German police came out and said, this man is a suspect in Madeline's murder. And everybody was like, oh my God, they must know something.
Right.
This man is currently serving time in jail on another charge. So he is like locked away. So over the last like year and a half, it seemed like the German police have kind of just been taking their time investigating. And there hasn't really been any major updates. But last week, the Portuguese police came out and officially named Bruckner as a suspect. So this is huge because the Portuguese police haven't named a suspect since they named Kate and Jerry McCann as suspects back in like 2008. And then Kate and Jerry were later cleared by them. So the Portuguese police have not had a suspect since 2008. And now they're coming out and saying that this man is a suspect. Now, one interesting thing to note is that in Portugal, prosecution has to happen within 15 years. There's a 15-year statute of limitations. So it seems as if that's why they're doing this. I'm not sure if naming him a suspect like extends it at all, but I've also heard that they have to charge him because right now he has not been charged. He's only named a suspect.
Right.
So I have seen some things that have said they have to charge him before the 15-year mark, which is coming up in like next week. So we'll see what happens if they have something that they can charge him with. I'm not really sure. Of course, it's like a different country and it's confusing enough in the US.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to figure it out, but there's no articles that I've found that explain it. So hopefully as more comes out about it, there will be. And I'll definitely keep you guys updated because if they really have something, this could be huge. But I hope that they do, because otherwise, if the statute of limitations passes, I don't think there's anything they can do. So,
yeah. So if you guys don't know this case, which I feel like most people do, we did cover it, like Haley said, in episode 37 and 38.
Awesome.
And I really hope that this is a real thing and he really did you know, do whatever he did to her, and we can figure out like where she is and get her some justice. And I hope it's not just for them, you know, trying to beat that statute of limitations.
I know, I have a feeling it might be, but hope maybe they actually have something that they've been like not sure about and are trying to wait, and now they can kind of like move forward. So,
which is like, why does this statute of limitations even exist? Like, this,
no, it's ridiculous. There's no point.
If someone committed a crime, no matter what the time limit has been, they should pay for that crime. I'm sorry.
Yeah, especially now with how much DNA technology is advancing. Like, it's advanced so much, and it's just going to continue advancing. So even though, like, we can't imagine right now, who knows what it'll be in 15 years from now, and there shouldn't be that set amount of time.
Yeah, especially for crimes like this, like violent crimes.
Yeah, I agree.
Definitely. Obviously, if you like shoplift or something, like who cares? Like,
yeah, yeah.
But don't do that either. But you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the Madeleine McCann update. We'll definitely continue to share more updates as they come out. And we typically share things earlier on our Instagram. So be sure you're following us over there for like updates in more real time. But yeah, I just wanted to give you guys that update before we get into today's episode.
All right. So on that segue, let's get into today's episode. Okay. So before I get started, I do want to warn you guys that this episode contains content that's not suitable for all audiences, and we will be discussing the topic of suicide. If you or someone you know has contemplated suicide, please reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255, or you can text CONNECT to 741-741, and that is the National Crisis Text Line. Okay, so I had already been planning to cover this case pretty much since I heard it. And, you know, they recently did a series on Hulu, if you guys have been watching The Girl from Plainville.
Yep.
So I'm going to be telling the story of Conrad Roy and Michelle Carter.
I am so excited that you're covering this because I had not heard about this case before the Hulu series.
And oh, really?
Yeah. I vaguely remember it now that I, like, have watched the series.
Look back.
But yeah. I didn't know all the details. And when I started watching the series, part of me wanted to look up the case. But then part of me was like, no, I should watch the series first and then I'll look it up. And then when you said you were going to cover it, I was like, okay, I'm not going to look it up. So all I know about it is the series. And I think I have one or two episodes left from the series. So like, I haven't even finished the series. So I am excited that you're covering it because I'm excited to like learn the full true story.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was too. Like, I remember the trial and I remember like hearing about it and having, you know, my opinions, which I'm going to try to leave out as much as possible.
Okay.
Or we can discuss it at the end, but I'm going to try to just give you guys the facts, as they were presented to me through the articles that I've read. But I didn't know a lot of details either, except for, you know, the biggest detail, which was the charges and the fact that he did, commit suicide or complete suicide. But yeah, it's a pretty crazy case, and definitely there's no like concise, clear black or white kind of outcome. There's a lot of gray area, so
yeah. All right,
let's get into it.
Are you gonna, before you start, are you gonna kind of talk about at all like things that the show changed versus like the real case?
Yeah, so I did look that up, and for the most part, like everything that they discussed in the show was pretty spot on. There was a few things that were, you know, kind of over dramatized, I guess you could say.
Okay.
But for the most part, I mean, most of the details in the show were pretty accurate.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, Conrad Roy III was born on September 12th, 1995 in Mattapoisett, Massachusetts, to Lynn and Conrad Jr. Conrad, better known by his family as Coco, had a troubled childhood and struggled with depression through most of his adolescent life. Conrad had attempted suicide 4 times before his actual death in 2014, which is so fucking sad.
That's so heartbreaking.
That he still, like, did it, you know? Yeah. Like, after attempting it and then not being successful and then, you know, getting the help that everyone thought he needed, and still that was his outcome.
Wow.
According to Lynn, his mother, Conrad had started having issues around the time of their divorce. Their divorce did get pretty messy and was pretty violent, much like their relationship. According to Boston.com, Conrad had written in a police report that there had been an incident where his father had beat him for not immediately putting away dinner. And this comes up later as well, because the defense, I guess, argued that that is the reason why Conrad committed suicide, not because of Michelle Carter. But we don't really know the dynamic. I mean, obviously they had a very volatile relationship, him and his father, and him and Michelle for that matter. But, you know, they're going to use that, obviously, in their favor.
Of course.
So Conrad had graduated from Old Rochester Regional High School in Mattapoisett that June. He was an all-around athlete. He played baseball, rode crew, and he ran track. And he had recently been accepted to Fitchburg State University and had planned to attend there in the fall. The day before his death, his family thought everything seemed all right with him. Like, his mom was talking about how he was in good spirits. Like, they had a really fun day. They had went out, like, the two of them and his sisters. He had two younger sisters. They all went out for ice cream. Like, everything seemed perfectly normal and perfectly fine.
That just breaks my heart so much.
I know. This case is really sad. Like, this is the kind of case that just, it gets you really deep. And
yeah,
it's too personal. I don't know. During the summers before his death, Conrad worked with his father, grandfather, and uncle at his family's marine salvage business, which was Tucker Roy Marine Towing and Salvage, Inc. And that was in the New England area. So they're in Massachusetts. That whole, like, all those states up there, they call New England. I'm sure you guys know that. But they had their own marine towing and salvage company. And in spring of 2014, so earlier that year, he had earned his captain's license from Northeast Maritime Institute. And he did that by completing 3 months of night classes. So he was very driven. It seemed like he had goals for his life, you know?
Okay. I don't think I knew about that. Or I guess I did.
That he worked there?
No, that he was doing night classes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he did that, I guess, because he was in regular school during the day, you
right,
know?
Right.
So he would have to attend night classes to get his... Okay.
Good for him. But yeah, like you said, clearly very driven.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, Conrad suffered greatly from depression and anxiety. He had, like, social anxiety and just generalized anxiety. He had made a video shortly before his death talking about his depression. And he kept saying that he was trying to better himself in his education. And he often would try to relate to other people through sports, TV shows, movies, and hobbies. He said, quote, "What I am doing is looking at myself so negatively, looking at myself, a minuscule little particle on the face of this earth, this no good trash that will never be successful, never have a wife, never have kids, never learn. But I do have a lot to offer someone."
Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter, and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode.
So he was in constant battle with himself. Like, he had no self-esteem, didn't feel like he amounted to anything. But on the other hand, he was like, wait a second, like, I do have all these things to offer someone. And he did. I mean, he had his captain's license. He was an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, he was a cute guy. Like, he, you know, I didn't know him personally, obviously, so I can't talk about his character or anything, but right. He just sounded like a good kid, you know?
He clearly wasn't just, you know, off doing drugs. Like, I feel like so many people his age end up being kind of bucketed into that type of group of, like, you know, well, he was just a bad kid doing drugs and whatever. Like, he clearly had his shit together and was going places.
Yeah. And one of the things that they did kind of depict in the show was that he, you know, he liked to party. He liked to go to parties, like high school parties and stuff like that. But to me, it was just like he kept it there, you know, didn't spill over into his daily, like, normal life. Yeah. Like, he was a high school kid having fun, like,
yeah,
you know, no big deal.
Yeah.
So now let's rewind things a bit. And now we enter into the chat Michelle Carter. Michelle and Conrad had met in 2012 while they were each visiting relatives in Naples, Florida, and they quickly discovered they were both from Massachusetts. Michelle was from Plainville, and Conrad was from Mattapoisett, which is less than an hour away from Plainville, which I think that's so, like, what are the odds of that, you know?
Yeah.
They're both from Massachusetts. They're both in Florida. They meet each other.
Yeah.
That's a huge coincidence. At that time, Michelle was 17 years old, and she was born on August 11th, 1996, in Massachusetts to Gail and David Carter. The two talked slash dated for about 2 years. During that 2 years, they only actually met up with one another 5 times in person, despite being only 50 miles apart, which is why I said talk slash dated, because to me, like, that's not dating, you know, if you're only seeing someone 5 times in 2 years.
Right.
Especially living so close together. It almost seemed like they didn't want to be around each other, but like, they were scared pursue things.
They definitely could have met up if they really wanted to.
Yeah. They did, however, exchange thousands of text messages in which they discussed intimate details about their lives, including Conrad's contemplation of suicide and Michelle's eating disorder, which she had suffered from since she was around 8 or 9 years old.
Wow.
That's crazy. 8 or 9? I know.
Wow.
Like, why are you even thinking about that at that age, you know?
Yeah. That's nurture. Like, nature versus nurture is such a big thing in true crime. And, I mean, there's probably some nature that led to that, like, her having some sort of, you know, chemical imbalance or something that, like, led her to think more like that, but right. You don't just think about that as an 8-year-old. Like, you have to either see it somewhere, hear it somewhere, and nurture doesn't just have to be, like, your parents.
It can be
just, like, your environment and the things that you're around. So, wow, that's so sad.
I feel like it's definitely a learned behavior, especially at that age.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even, at 8 or 9, you're not even, shouldn't even be worried about your size.
Yeah,
you know?
Not at all. And also, I feel like the thousands of text messages thing, I feel like they, in the show at least, it tried to be like, oh my god, they talked so much. But it's like, being a teen, like, I was a teen, like, in high school when texting was, like, became big. And I definitely exchanged thousands of text messages with friends, with Rob when we were in high school, like, that's just what you did. I mean, Rob and I would literally text each other all day while we were in school at the same school. So, like,
yeah,
I feel like in the show, they, like, tried to make such a big deal out of, like, they were talking all the time. And it's like, well, that's just what teenagers did at that time. Like, it's just what it was.
I agree.
And what it still is today. So I don't think that's
and
so
now you
crazy.
Have the social media aspect. So not only are you texting, but you're DMing and PMing.
Snapchatting and TikToking.
So, like,
and
who knows? I was going to say our group chat, we probably, between all of the different things, we probably message each other thousands of times a day sometimes.
Easily. So I just wanted to say that because I kind of got that from the show, and like, I don't know how much that relates to the actual case, but I'm sure that they definitely were kind of like, oh, they were talking all the time. It's like, yeah, but that was normal.
I think their parents were alarmed from that just because it was like all night, all day, all night, all day, you know? But yeah, like, everyone was doing that in 2014.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
So, you know, they're discussing all these details about their lives. They're getting into very deep subject matters like suicide, eating disorders, mental health. But they also discussed their love for one another, and they made plans to meet up so many times, but those plans always fell through. And to me, it seems, which this is going to be my opinion, I am going to throw my opinion in there really quick, but it seems to me that, like, they use each other as almost like therapy. like talking about their problems, leaning on each other, maybe feeding off of each other a little bit, which is very toxic if that's what your relationship
100% is,
you know, focused on. And I kind of think maybe that's the reason they never, or not that they never, but they rarely met up, because that was kind of like the foundation of their relationship.
Right. And then it would be weird, like, seeing somebody that you've divulged your deepest secrets to in person.
Yeah. So on top of the thousands of text messages, they also shared numerous emails and phone calls as well. And like I said, you know, I definitely feel like they fed off of one each other. They fed off of each other due to the commonality of their mental health issues. I touched base on Michelle's eating disorder, but it's also documented that she, too, suffered from depression and allegedly engaged in self-harm by cutting. Some of Michelle's friends told New York Magazine that she had made references to spending time at McLean Hospital, which was a psychiatric hospital in Belmont, Massachusetts. She had been taking prescription drugs for her mental health since she was around 14 years of age. Conrad was also on prescription medication for his depression and was seeing several therapists and counselors, including a cognitive behavioral therapist, in the weeks prior to his death. So when I was doing my research, it said that they both took the prescription medication Celexa. When we get into the trial, I'm going to talk more about that. So just keep that in your back pocket for now.
Okay.
Also, in the weeks prior to Conrad's death, it is reported that Michelle asked him 40 times through text messaging when he was going to kill himself.
Okay, now that's a lot.
40 times.
One time is too much, but...
Yeah, 40 times.
Wow.
And that's just in the weeks, like the week or two prior to his death. I mean, who knows?
And that's just over text message. Didn't they talk on the phone also?
Yeah. She also reportedly sent Conrad more than 1,000 texts in the week leading up to his death. Again, like you said, that's relative, but, you know, worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Because in the show, they definitely make her seem impulsive and kind of manic, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I think that, based on this, kind of tells that same story.
Yeah, I could see that.
At first, Michelle encouraged Conrad to seek psychiatric help prior to her attitude changing in 2014. She had texted him that it would be so good for him to seek help and that they would get through their issues together. She said, quote, "Think about it. You aren't going to get better on your own. You know it. No matter how many times you tell yourself you are, you need a professional. You need professional help like me. People who know how to treat it and fix it."
I mean, she's not wrong.
Yeah, she's not.
But I don't think she went about it the right way.
Yeah, maybe the wording wasn't the greatest. Like, you're not going to fix it yourself. Like, you have to have help.
Yeah, like, she could have, if she truly cared about him, she could have, like, done
encouraged
it.
Him a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's suspected that Michelle starting her own prescription medication could possibly be the reason that her attitude changed.
Okay. That would make sense.
Yeah. So this is going off of what I was saying earlier. According to psychiatrist Dr. Peter Bregan, who actually testified during Michelle's trial, the drug Michelle was taking, which was Celexa, can inhibit impulse control and disrupt frontal lobe function. Oh. He also said that the young brain is more susceptible to harm from that type of drug.
Okay.
Yeah. He stated that this particular drug likely affected her ability to empathize and reason, in addition to causing her to become aggressive, hostile, and manic.
Okay.
So this is, you know, one opinion from one psychiatrist based on, you know, some studies I'm sure that they've done on Celexa and young adults, teenagers taking it. Mm-hmm. But again, everyone's different. Everyone's brain chemistry is different. And it doesn't necessarily excuse any of her behavior or the way she handled certain situations, but it's definitely worth taking this into consideration, which I'm sure that, you know, they did during her trial, but
yeah.
And so she was on this medication and so was Conrad.
Okay.
So I find that interesting as well, but
yeah,
I just wanted to talk about that too. Whatever the reason may be, Michelle did in fact begin to encourage Conrad to take his own life. And on Sunday, July 13th, 2014, after texting with Michelle that whole day, Conrad Roy climbed into his truck, drove down to the local Kmart, turned on the gas-powered water pump he'd placed in the back seat, started the pump with the windows up, and committed suicide. It is believed that it took up to 20 minutes for him to succumb to the poisonous fumes.
Oh my God.
And it's also suspected that Michelle was on the phone with him as he was dying.
I have no words. That's so heartbreaking.
Earlier that day, Conrad had started to again second guess going through with his plan to end his life, telling Michelle that he was, quote, that it was, quote, already light outside, and that he was going to go back to sleep. She disagreed, replying, no, it's probably the best time now because everyone is sleeping. Just go somewhere in your truck. No one is really out there right now because it's an awkward time. If you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. And you can say you'll do it tomorrow, but you probably won't. Tonight, love you.
That just...
I know.
I feel like I didn't get the full effect of that while watching the show. Like, the full...
Yeah, they didn't show...
Yeah.
I feel like... I don't know. I feel like the show definitely portrayed her in a negative light. But I also feel like they left out... like a lot of the text messages and the stuff that she said. Now, granted, I'm like you. I think I have like two episodes left, so I don't know what else is going to come out.
Okay, yeah, I feel like too when they showed the text messages, like it was kind of like in the background or they didn't always show it, and I always struggle to like read the text messages when they just put it on the screen for a second.
Yeah,
but I definitely didn't get the full effect of like. That's what she sent to him
mm-hmm.
before. Like, wow.
There were many text messages with that same context.
Right.
Like, kind of, well, here I go again, giving my opinion, but kind of like berating him and bullying him almost.
Right.
Which obviously context is lost over text messaging all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty of feeling that way and probably sending that message like where people question what I'm trying to say too.
Yeah.
So, you know, we take that into consideration, but I don't know. Some of these text messages, I'm like,
yeah,
I think we all get the context, which I don't know why. I don't know why she would want him to kill himself because she loved him, supposedly.
Right.
According to Esquire magazine, text messages found during the investigation, it was actually Michelle's idea to use that method of suicide. She had stated, quote, carbon monoxide poisoning is the best option. If you fall asleep in your car while it's running in the garage, it will kill you, and there's no pain. She had also previously suggested other means to Conrad, such as hanging or stabbing himself. And she even suggests he drink bleach.
That to me shows intent that she wanted him to take his own life.
Mm-hmm. So after a formal investigation, Michelle Carter was indicted on February 4th, 2015 on charges of involuntary manslaughter and was arraigned the following day. Michelle pled not guilty to the manslaughter charges and waived her right to trial by jury. On June 16th, 2017, at the age of 20, Michelle was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison.
Wait, so if you waive your right to a jury trial, the judge just decides if you're pleading not guilty?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
After an appeals process, her sentence was reduced to 15 months plus 5 years probation with the eligibility of parole after serving 11 months of her sentence. Bristol County Judge Lawrence Moniz said that he found Michelle Carter guilty of involuntary manslaughter, not because of her prior text messages, but rather due to her phone calls with Conrad Roy when he was in his truck gassing himself. Particularly incriminating was when he exited the truck and Carter encouraged him to, quote, get back in.
Mm-hmm.
Of that moment, Judge Moniz said she instructed Mr. Roy to get back in the truck, well knowing all of the feelings that he had exchanged with her, his ambiguities, his fears, his concerns. She did nothing. She did not call the police or Mr. Roy's family. And finally, she did not issue a simple additional instruction, get out of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why she's guilty.
Yep.
After the guilty verdict, Conrad's father stated publicly that the family was happy with the verdict, but that they wanted their privacy, which is, they deserve that.
Yep.
Lynn, Conrad's mother, appeared on the show 48 Hours, saying she didn't believe that Michelle had a conscience and that she knew exactly what she was doing. Michelle was released around 3 months early on January 23rd, 2020, for good behavior. She spent less than a year in prison.
Wow.
A spokesperson for the Bristol County Sheriff's Office said that she was, quote, a model inmate and that she had attended programs. She had a job inside the jail and she was always polite to the staff and volunteers. She got along with other inmates and had no discipline issues whatsoever. Michelle was on probation until August 1st of 2021. What is Michelle up to now? Well, according to NBC Boston, no one really knows. Michelle has kept a pretty low profile since her release, but earlier this month, so the month of April, she was spotted doing yard work outside of her home in Massachusetts.
And she's how old? Like 22 now? No,
she's 23
or 24. 25, so about my
24.
Age.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that is the case of Michelle Carter and Conrad Roy.
So she was convicted of manslaughter, but barely served. I mean, her sentence was nothing to start with, but then barely served anything.
She didn't even serve a year.
Wow.
Yeah. So to kind of touch base back on what you were asking, like how accurate that was the show, and there's also a documentary that they made. Hold on, let me look it up because I had it in my head and I just forgot. Yeah, it's called I Love You Now Die, The Commonwealth versus Michelle Carter, which I haven't watched that, but I do want to watch it, especially now that I've like watched the show and done the research on the case. Also, can I just say that Elle Fanning's portrayal of Michelle Carter on that show is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And they made her look so much like her. It is insane.
Yeah, she did an amazing job.
Yeah. So the only thing that I could find that was different or, you know, not historically accurate, I guess you could say, is the portrayal of Susie, her friend, in the series, the one that she kind of has like a romantic relationship with. That character actually like doesn't exist, but they have like speculation that it could be someone else in her life.
Oh.
But that's like a completely made up character, I guess you could say.
Okay, interesting. But they like think that maybe it could be somebody else in her life.
Another girl that she was friends with, that I guess she became obsessed with her. So very similar to the storyline between her and Susie.
Okay.
But the person Susie does not actually exist in Michelle's life.
Okay, gotcha.
So that was pretty much the only
differences.
Yeah. So it was pretty, I know they say at the beginning, like, this is based on a true story, but we've like dramatized a whole bunch of stuff basically to make it juicier and like more entertaining. But I think it's pretty entertaining in of itself, which is terrible to say because it's someone died. So it's not like entertaining in that the way that I find something entertaining.
Yeah.
But they, I don't know what I was going to say. I like lost my train of thought.
Like they dramatized it a little bit.
Yeah. They dramatized it. But I think most of the things that happened really happened, and they didn't really have to do a lot of dramatizing, right, if you will.
Wow. That really is so crazy. And I feel like it, like, hopefully this show brings more awareness, because obviously she can't be charged again because she was convicted of it and it is what it is. But at least bringing more awareness to, one, Conrad's death and, like, what happened to him. And two, like, you know, if, and again, this is my opinion, but I believe that she was guilty of this. And in that case, like, she should have to serve just, or, you know, he deserves the justice for that. And her name being out there more because of the show hopefully contributes to that just a tiny bit.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy to me that, I guess in, well, I don't know, I guess it's different in different states, but I remember reading that assisted suicide is not illegal, and that may be just in Massachusetts. I'm not sure how it is everywhere.
Okay.
It may vary from state to state, but I feel like it should be illegal across the board. Yeah,
it definitely, like, I feel like it should definitely constitute, it should be manslaughter.
Yeah. Like, obviously, if somebody, you know, God forbid, wants to end their life and, you know, they choose to do that, obviously that's their choice and that's between them and God or who they believe in. But to help someone do that, yeah, I think that's pretty sick and I think it's pretty evil. And especially in this manner, obviously, you know, when it comes to like people who are dying of terminal cancer and like, you know, people think they should be able to just give them, you know, morphine and let them go peacefully. Like, I definitely know that happens. And I do feel like in some cases it can be considered humane. But in these type cases where the person is just ending their life to end it, they can't, they can't go on anymore, it definitely should not be legal for someone to help them do so.
I feel like you should be required to, like, help them get the help.
Help. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. That's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. You should definitely help anyone. If you love and care about someone, that should be your number one priority, is getting them the help that they need. And
there are resources out there. You can get help. Things can get better. Yeah. And there are so many resources out there for that.
Right. And medication too. Like, I am all about, like, figure it out, try to figure it out on your own. But if that doesn't work, there's nothing wrong with getting medicated at all. And sometimes it takes trying 2, 3, 4 different types of antidepressants or, you know, mood stabilizers or whatever it is that you're dealing with before you find the right fit. I mean, I personally have dealt with that before. Like, in my past, I had to take all these different drugs to figure out which one worked for me. And, you know, it is kind of scary when you're in it because there's, like, side effects and things like that. But eventually you'll find the right fit, you know, for your brain.
100%. And
it will help you so tremendously much. And then, of course, therapy. I mean, therapy, we're strong believers of therapy. And we've both been to therapy. And it does help. And with a combination of the right prescription medication and therapy, you can get better.
Yeah.
It might not be perfect and you might not live this fairy tale life and, you know, have no worries and no sad days, but it can definitely get better.
It can get better. Yeah.
Yeah. So I will, we'll have it linked in the show notes, the hotline that you can reach out to, if you or someone you know is, suffering from these feelings. And always, I mean, if you guys, we're here for you.
Yeah.
If you're having a hard time, we are, I mean, we're not professionals in that sense, you know, but we can definitely point you in the right direction to help you get the help that you need. So you're not alone, and we love you guys, and your life matters, and Conrad's life mattered, and it's just so sad that, that people think that they don't matter and that they have to do things like this.
Yeah. That's a really good reminder.
So thank you guys so much for listening today. And until next week, keep it human.
Bye, everyone.